Lisa, Kathy, Chris, Camilo, all of you. It's been a very lively and stimulating discussion this morning, and I am full of gratitude to you and all those who didn't feel they could call in but listened attentively, and especially to people who go a step further and support this station in whatever way they're able. And thank you to Sonia for board operating this morning. I'm Paul Olin. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
My teeth as it is, so take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source of all protection. Look right now and you will see she's only here by the skin of her teeth as it is, so take heart.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today, our show was taped during the volatile COVID-19 pandemic. With our studio unavailable to us and our commitment to social distancing, we are using the Zoom platform to record today's show.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Today, we are going to take a good look at Measure 107, dealing with campaign finance issues in Oregon. A yes vote supports authorizing the state legislature and local governments to, one, enact laws or ordinances limiting campaign contributions and expenditures, also to require disclosure of contributions and expenditures, and it also requires that political advertisements identify the people or entities that paid for them. This will be on the ballot statewide for the election this November. Our guest today is Kate Titus, Oregon State Director for Common Cause. Kate has been a longtime advocate for campaign finance reform and is a proponent of this measure. We are grateful she can join us today. As of the time of this taping, we can find no organized opposition to this proposed measure. If you, our listeners, have thoughts to share, please contact us through our website, insidewashco.org, or email me directly at rob@insidewashco.org. Welcome, Kate. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me onto this show, and thank you for taking the time to discuss this very important issue.
Before we get into today's topic, would you mind giving our listeners a little background on Common Cause and specifically the organization's involvement in campaign finance reform?
Sure. Common Cause is a 50-year-old organization. Actually, this is our 50-year anniversary this year. That formed to give people more of a voice in the political process. The founder was in a presidential cabinet, a Republican actually in a Democratic cabinet, in Lyndon's cabinet. John Gardner looked around Washington, D.C. and said, everyone's organized here but the people. Policies being made by big corporate interests, not the voters themselves, and started an organization that allowed people to have an organized voice in the democratic process. And the organization very quickly began to focus on democracy issues themselves, because we realized right off that the rules of the game matter. And so it's become one of the large national democracy organizations, but we have a base in every state, including here in Oregon. And so I represent the Oregon office of Common Cause, but we're tens of thousands of people here in Oregon and over a million people around the country working to hold power accountable and protect and advance our democracy.
Nice to think that there's that many people that are engaged. However they're engaged, it's nice to see that they are. Moving to today's topic, why are campaign finance limits unconstitutional in our state?
This goes back decades, and there's a long involved history, but the probably what's most useful for listeners to know is back some two decades ago, 1997, the Oregon Supreme Court made a ruling interpreting our state constitution to be very restrictive in what we Oregonians can do in limiting money's influence on the political process. It's just actually decided to reverse course on that this year. And so some of that is changing, but it's in process. And what's happened in the intervening years is that the legislature has been very reluctant to enact any rules that limit money's influence in our democracy. They felt that they had their hands tied, and when voters have bypassed them and passed things at the ballot, the state has failed to enact it, saying that the courts wouldn't let us. We need to get it clear in our state constitution, resolve that ambiguity, and make it clear that we Oregonians have the right that every other state has. Our state constitution, the language governing this, is actually virtually identical to every other state. We need to clarify that we have the right to limit the influence of money in our political process.
Now, I appreciate that. And also, as I said earlier, we couldn't find any, at the moment of our taping, we can't find anybody who opposes this measure in an organized way. But the Senate took some testimony, and the chair of the Libertarian Party came out with the following statement. I have his permission to share it with you, and it's in his Senate testimony. Kyle Markley stated, I strongly oppose any constitutional amendment that would weaken Oregon's freedom of speech guarantees. Campaign contributions and expenditure limits do not create a level playing field. In fact, they tilted against the voices representing concentrated interests, voices that deserve to be heard. We must never suppress speech that is critical of government or government officials, even if that speech occurs near an election, perhaps especially if that speech occurs near an election, end quote. This is his opinion, but I'm wondering how you would respond to that, having more or less a ruling that treats cash as conversation.
Yeah, thank you. It's a good question. Voters have a right to know the true source of campaign information and put sensible limits on money spent to influence our votes. I understand where Kyle is coming from. He's worried about limits on speech, but it's been clear around the country that money is not speech. We can limit the excess of money without limiting the content of speech. We're not talking here about limiting anyone's content of speech. People can say whatever they want, whatever they believe, and that's part of our democratic heritage. But nobody has the right, because they are a gazillionaire, to amplify their speech and drown out the voices of everyone else. That's what it comes down to.
Understood. How would Measure 107, should it pass, change political campaigns in Oregon?
So Measure 107, Fair and Honest Elections, at its simplest, it's a measure to get money out of politics. What it does specifically, it amends the state constitution to allow Oregon voters and our legislature to enact laws limiting money in the political process. That means laws that limit campaign contributions and spending, require disclosure of political contributions and spending, require, most importantly, that political ads disclose who paid for them. What we're seeing now is a move back on the courts to recognizing that limits themselves on money are actually constitutionally valid. I think we should not just rely on that recent ruling. We want to get this very clear in our Constitution. What's happened with some of the federal law, the federal Constitution rulings have made it so that even though we can limit the money that's going directly to legislators, at this point in time, we cannot limit money that's being spent outside on advertisements, and we cannot require always in Oregon that where that money is coming from. As long as people can spend money in unlimited ways to influence our vote, we have a fundamental right to be able to know where that money is coming from, who's putting this message out. And if we have an organization that puts out big ads and all see the television screen or whatever media source people look to, whether it's online, and it's giving all this information, and it leads you to believe that this information is coming from some entity that sounds really trustworthy. Maybe it's Parents for Good Education. But what you realize is really behind it is this group that's about something totally different. Then it gives you a way to evaluate that information and be an informed voter. But if you can't know that, then we're all at risk of being pawns of secret money's surreptitious influence.
The way I read this measure, it would allow or enable the state and counties and cities to enact campaign limits. But will they do so?
Well, it's really up to the local communities to decide whether it makes sense in their community or not. We've seen actually voters in Portland and Multnomah County, both in recent years, pass limits, which were then held up in court, and it was unclear, different parts of it, whether or not the limits, whether or not also the transparency pieces of it, what of that would hold up because of the way the courts have been viewing this. Now, since then, the courts have moved forward on those measures and reversed the interpretation of the state constitution on limits. So we're making progress on that front. But we know in Portland, large numbers of voters were really interested to have limits on local elections, and those ballot measures passed with around 89 and 87% of the voters, I think, which is unheard of.
I'm wondering, when we look at the freedom that the jurisdictions have, whether or not to set limits, again, assuming this passes, I'm wondering if there's going to be any regional differences. If you expect to see, like we talked about, Portland and Multnomah County passing similar positive legislation, creating a more welcoming climate for campaign finance regulation. I'm just thinking, traditionally, there's a lot of issues where Oregon sees and other states see a rural-urban split. Is this going to be one of those?
Well, I think there's always some regional difference in how policies are implemented. So, what kind of limits make sense in a place like Bend or Burns or in Lane County, might differ from another place. But the fundamental issue at the heart of this, of whether or not we need to break this stranglehold of money on our politics and have the ability to put some restraints on the influence of money and to open up so that we all know who's trying to influence our votes, that we see almost no difference from rural, urban, across different parts of the state, also across different demographics, across political party, Democrats, Republicans, independents. There is huge support for doing something about this problem of money in politics. Really, the only subset of people who are much more resistant to change is the small faction of people who are very much wrapped up in trying to influence the political process with money.
And in keeping with where we're at here, the measure requires the disclosure of expenses and contributions. I'm a little confused because I thought that was already state law and it was managed by ORSTAR.
We already had the precedent in place that money being given directly to candidates had to be reported. And
yes,
Nobody challenged that, and it kept. And then as we were able to make that electronic and online, so it's much more accessible. However, that only applies to the money that's given directly to elected officials. What we've seen since 2010, when the federal Supreme Court ruled in this very now infamous case, Citizens United. They passed a ruling that really opened up a green light for money spent independent of the candidates. So what we've seen since 2010, over the last decade, is a huge amount of money not going to the candidate campaigns themselves, but going around the candidates. Candidates don't like it either because they feel like they're no longer in control of their message. There's these sort of secret super PAC campaigns that are big advertisements and things. So a lot of money is going there. And that's that secret money, sometimes it's called dark money, but the super PAC money, that's the money that we have no ability to make transparent. And we need laws that require the advertisements themselves to list who's behind them. And we need drill down components to that so that you can't just say, well, you make up a name of some committee that sounds good. And like, as I said, like Parents for Good Education for Our Kids or something like that, when it's really someone else, you've got to go down to where's the money coming from behind this ad, and have that out in the open, and have that also reported in Orrestar.
This measure is so broad. I wonder how specific it can be on some of what I see are the loopholes, like we're just talking about. Does this measure stop the ability to use PACs to disguise where money's coming from and who's really behind it? Are there additional loopholes in this measure that you can see?
Well, the measure itself doesn't enact any reform. What it does is it clarifies that we have the constitutional authority to reduce money's influence in the political process. In some ways, it's not nearly enough because we need reforms that actually implement this. But it's the most fundamental, the foundational piece. We need to clarify in our Constitution that we have the authority to do this so that we can then move forward. Then there's some key laws, some key reforms that we can pass that we already know work. We've seen it work in other places. What we can do it here in Oregon is pass a collection of the best practices that we know work. And then we will need to evolve them somewhat over time. The thing about democracy is things do change. You're never done once and for all, that you've got to make it real. And with money in politics in particular, there's always this drive for those with money to use that to try to their advantage for power. And so sometimes there'll be a shift in the way things happen, and we have to shift the rules to play to that too. But there are laws right now that would make a huge difference that we can put into a place, but we have to start by just clarifying that we have the constitutional authority to do so.
Understood. And you were very kind to explain the limits to what Orrestar records in contributions. I have a similar question about the measure requiring ads to identify who's behind them. I was under the impression that that was also state law. You always hear, you know, this message is approved by so-and-so, you know, in their own voice, or this message was brought to you by the such-and-such PAC, for that matter. Am I incorrect in that? Do we not legislate that ads have to show where they came from?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's actually a very common assumption, one I had myself until just a few years ago, because in the history of our country, there was a point at which that was mandated nationally. Any on-the-air advertisements had to list who was behind it, and that has changed. But the history is so rooted in many Americans' minds, maybe not the younger generations, but many of us, that many people assume it's still true. Mm-hmm. And in fact, many of the campaigns still follow that. But those who are particularly trying to hide their money don't necessarily follow it, or they will put some kind of a front group as the, you know, announce this ad is paid for by Oregonians for Better Things, when really it's foreign influence meant to totally deceive you.
I'm thinking in terms of the different regions, just looking at it a little differently again. When we talk in terms of the things that this measure is trying to enable jurisdictions to accomplish. I'm wondering if there's such a thing as the advisability of uniformity across jurisdictions, and whether the state should actually set limits, even if they allow for the variances, like campaigns will cost more in Lane County than they would in Baker County, I would presume. Perhaps they could do something like that. Does that make any sense to you?
I think what's most likely to pass is a limit for statewide elections, and then leaving it to local jurisdictions to decide if they want to set any limits for their own local communities. I think that's probably what's most likely.
So in that, could a jurisdiction also set different limits for different contributors? Say, for example, certain limits for individuals and certain limits for corporations?
If you set a limit for corporations, it would have to be for all corporations. If you set a limit for individuals, it would have to be for all individuals. So, but there could be variance between entities and individuals. I mean, at the end of the day, it should be that the voters have the biggest influence. And so restricting entities differently can make sense.
Which leads us to something you mentioned earlier, that Supreme Court decision, more or less talking about corporations as people, as individuals. And because the Supreme Court has ruled corporations should be treated as individuals when it comes to donating funds to campaigns, if the state or a specific jurisdiction wanted to challenge that, could they?
Yeah, the whole legal argument about corporations being people is problematic and ridiculous. I mean, there is a sense, in a legal sense, in which understanding corporations and entities and people all as the same term for certain kinds of legal understanding makes sense. But when we're talking about power in our democracy, obviously, to most people, to most voters, that doesn't sound, just sounds ridiculous. So that is something that we need to clarify. We can do so in our state, and we've got to contend also with the federal election. But I think that the starting point is passing Measure 107 to clarify the authority for reducing the influence of money in politics at all.
Certainly. The measure is intended to pave that way. Should it pass, what's the next step? What I mean by that is, will the legislature take up putting together, for the state, of course, for their own jurisdiction, putting together the actual limits? Will they set up a commission to do that? Will they set up an advisory commission to help all the jurisdictions across the state? Any idea what the post-victory plan would be after Measure 107 comes, should it pass?
Yeah, I think legislators are very much looking toward trying to tackle this in the 2021 legislature. They know that this is likely to pass. And in fact, in the 2019 session, they did make some first attempts. There was a lot of conversation trying to move toward consensus. It's an uphill, challenging task to try to settle on limits. It's not so, what's challenging is not so much the dollar amount of any limits, whether it should be $500 or $5,000 or $50. It's more about making sure you have a system that doesn't have loopholes. So we can all agree on some level, some outer level. Nobody can give more than $500 or $1,000, but you want to make sure it's set in a way that then people can't shift money around. And that's the tricky thing. It can be done, but it does take political will. So then the question becomes, will the legislature have enough political will to get it done? One of the first things is, I think we all need to agree on a set of principles of what are we trying to aim for, so that legislators can test any reforms that they're looking at against those criteria. Any good reform has got to minimize money's influence. It's got to build public trust and transparency. It's got to increase and diversify participation and lead to more reflective representation. If it's not doing those things, then it's not really getting at the intended goal. So I think if we can get buy-in on principles, it'll be easier for us to work toward reform. That we need, particularly right off, some set of outer limits and a stronger transparency regime to get at the hidden super PAC money that's been unleashed over the last decade. If the legislature is not able to do this, which I think is quite possible, then the community reform group that is really behind, that's been driving this, we're championing this, we will bring it to the ballot, and we'll get it done with the voters. So, it's complex. The reason we elect a legislature is to deal with complex issues. It's much better to deal with very complex issues through a deliberative body than at an election, because voters, we don't have time to sit through a lot, hours and hours of hearings and do that in-depth research. But if it comes to it and we can't get it done through the legislature, we'll need to go to the voters. The other thing I'd say to your question is, in terms of what's the next steps and what we really need, beyond limits and transparency, there's more reform that's will really be game-changing for the elections. And what we've seen in some places around the country, including now here in Portland, but not statewide, is using some limited amount of public funds to match private funds in a way that amplifies small dollar donations and allows us to place some limits. We can do this as long as it's voluntary. We can get around the constitutional constraints. And because it can be a very effective way to allow the voices of ordinary voters to overcome the influence of money, it's an option that's very appealing. And where we offer it, candidates tend to opt in, and those who don't tend to pay a penalty in public perception. And so even as a voluntary system, it can be very effective. People do opt in and use it. But these small, publicly funded small dollar matching programs can really make a difference. This is the first year Portland is launching, in this election, is trying it out for their own local election. They've called it Open and Accountable Elections. Common Cause played a leadership role in getting that passed and implemented. And it really has resulted in a more robust and diverse pool of candidates having a more realistic chance at winning. We'll see over time, I think, it play out even more. I mean, one election only shows so much. But we've seen similar systems making a big difference in other places around the country. New York City, which went from being one of the most diverse places represented by very undiverse city council decades ago, to having a much more reflective city council. We've seen similar kinds of public finance systems in Maine, in Connecticut, more recently in parts of Maryland, Colorado. And where we see it, it does open it up so that you have more diverse and reflective set of candidates able to run, able to win. And then what we see is once they're in office, they're more able to pass reforms that really support the public interest.
Thank you, Kate, so much. Would it be possible to give kind of a closing summary statement about Measure 107?
Well, thank you for that. And I think your questions were actually wonderful. I guess I would just say voters have a right to know the true source of campaign information and to put sensible limits on money spent to influence our votes. If we're ever going to realize the full promise of this imperfect democracy, make it truly reflective and representative of the American people, including Black and Brown, Asian, Latino, Indigenous people, also including working people across all races. If we're going to hold power accountable, then we need to divorce power in our democracy from wealth.
We want to once again thank our guest, Kate Titus, Oregon State Director for Common Cause. And to note that as we tape this in late August, we found no organized opposition to this measure. If anyone out there has thoughts to share, please get them to us. Just email me directly at rob@insidewashco.org. Thank you very much. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you.
thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Today on Wings, our exit interview with Dr. Perna Sen. In August 2020, Sen returned from New York to the UK after 5 years working for UN Women, first as policy director and then executive coordinator and spokesperson on sexual harassment and other forms of discrimination.
What does it mean? How does it happen? Who does it happen to? Who gets away with it? Why don't people talk about it?
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Perna Sen is a well-known global activist and scholar in the areas of women, gender, and human rights. Her doctoral thesis at the University of Bristol in England was titled A Basket of Resources, Women's Resistance to Domestic Violence in Calcutta. In the decades since, she's published in her field and worked with prominent institutions, including the London School of Economics, the Commonwealth Secretariat, and Amnesty International. In 2015, Sen was a Labour candidate for Parliament in the UK, and she spoke out about vicious online trolling. After losing to the incumbent, a woman from the Greens, she accepted the post of policy director at UN Women, and later focused in on harassment and discrimination. She talks about that work in this interview with